4:2-6. Devote yourselves to prayer, being watchful and thankful, and pray for us too that God may open a door for our message, so that we may proclaim the mystery of Christ, for which I am in chains. Pray that I may proclaim it clearly as I should. Be wise in the way you act towards outsiders. Make the most of every opportunity. Let your conversation always be full of grace, seasoned with salt, so that you may know how to answer everyone. Pray for you, Mr. Lord, I pray that you'll be with Larry. I pray that you will speak to all of us through him, that the words that he says will be the words that you've given him, and that you will make them make sense to us and be significant in our thinking and our living. In Jesus' name.
Thank you, Paul. Good morning, everybody. How about some applause for Paul and the kids? That was a great demonstration. That might cut a few minutes out of my sermon, actually. That was well explained. I'm not making any promises. Now, have I got this operational? Let's find out. Oh, yeah, that looks good. Okay, yeah, I've actually got a slideshow today. I think I need applause for that, since I so rarely make use of that technology. So we're going to be looking at a particular practical tool for evangelism this morning that I think is also very, very biblical. It's one that I have begun using myself when I have opportunity to talk with non-Christians or interact with them, and so I think it's very helpful. As Paul indicated, it's called the Ambassador Model. Okay, it comes from a Christian teacher named Greg Kokel. It actually comes from the Bible, but Kokel's done a really good job of putting it together in an easy-to-learn form. His ministry is called Stand to Reason. I'd like to encourage you to check out his website at www.str.org. There's some great resources there, including his Ambassador Basic Curriculum. You could also search for his name, if you remember how to spell it, on YouTube. There's some great talks and stuff by him on there that are worth watching. And then his book, Tactics, there's a picture of it up there. A Game Plan for Discussing Your Christian Convictions, which is exactly what we're on about. We want to be able to discuss our beliefs with non-Christians. There's a few folks in the church that have begun or finished reading that book besides myself, and they've all indicated to me that they think it looks quite good. So if you want to borrow my copy or somebody else's, there may be some around. Colossians, that passage we had read, that's a very important passage. We're going to look at it in a bit too. Before we do, let's look at 2 Corinthians 5. This is where Greg Kokel gets the word ambassador from. God reconciled us to himself through Christ and gave us the ministry of reconciliation, that God was reconciling the world to himself in Christ, not counting people's sins against them. And he has committed to us the message of reconciliation. We are therefore Christ's ambassadors, as though God were making his appeal through us. We implore you, on Christ's behalf, be reconciled to God. God made him who had no sin to be sin for us, so that in him we might become the righteousness of God. Now, notice how clear the gospel is in that passage, of course. It's through Jesus' death and resurrection that he was made sin for us, so that in him we could become the righteousness of God. We who were enemies of God as sinners, we are reconciled to God and can be his people now through Jesus Christ. So that's really good. And I think the logic of the passage is that Paul himself receives reconciliation with God through Christ and in turn is given the ministry of reconciliation to bring that message to other people, including the Corinthians, whom he urges on Christ's behalf as an ambassador to be reconciled to God. And the implication is then that just as Paul received reconciliation, and then passed it on, so the Corinthians will as well. They, too, will be ambassadors for Christ, and so should we. Now, we don't represent Christ with the same authority that an apostle does. That's a very special office. However, we do represent Christ in the world around us. Anyway, this is the passage where Coco gets the term ambassador for his approach to evangelism. We represent Christ. And Coco asked himself, just like Paul did with the kids, what makes a good ambassador? And the three things that he identified were knowledge, wisdom, and character. Paul did a very good job with the kids of explaining much of this. We need to know what our master's on about if we're going to be good ambassadors. That's non-negotiable. It makes no sense. You can't represent somebody if you don't know their business. You need wisdom, which is the skill of engaging with people and communicating effectively. And you need character. You need a personal character that reflects well on the person that you're representing. Any good ambassador needs these three qualities, at least, to represent his or her master well. And Paul also said that this is very similar to the summary that I often use, which is know the gospel, live the gospel, tell the gospel. And the reason I use that summary is because I got it from the Bible. It's a distillation of what the Bible says about how we represent Jesus. And so I would say the same about Kokel's model. All it does is put in an easy-to-remember form what the Bible says. So in addition to 2 Corinthians 5, we do want to look a little bit at Colossians. We're going to look at a few passages briefly, and I want you to keep those in the back of your mind as we go through the ambassador model. In particular, there are some phrases in red, and I'm going to be echoing those as we go. Paul writes to the Colossians, "Be wise in the way you act toward outsiders. Make the most of every opportunity. Let your conversation be always full of grace, seasoned with salt, so that you may know how to answer everyone." Now, just on the surface, did you catch knowledge and wisdom and character in those couple of verses? Everyone knows this one. 1 Peter 3:15, always be prepared to give an answer to anyone who asks the reason for the hope that you have, but do this with gentleness and respect. Most of us would be familiar with that verse, I think. So we'll have that knocking around in the back of our heads as we go. And then, of course, there's our Great Commission. That's where we get the expression, disciples making disciples from, which is our vision for the church. It's the Lord's command to his people, go and make disciples of all nations, baptizing them in the name of the Father, and the Son, and the Holy Spirit, and teaching them to obey all that I have commanded you. So those texts are what we're going to use to weigh up Kokel's ambassador model as we go. Let's look at knowledge and wisdom and character each in turn. So there's knowledge. An ambassador must know his or her master's business. And then thinking of the Colossians passage, he told them to know how to answer. Well, at the very least, to know how to answer someone, you have to know an answer, don't you? So knowledge is just essential. Peter said to be prepared to give a reason for the hope that we have. Well, obviously you can't do that if you don't know the reason. And finally, considering the Great Commission, if we are to teach others to obey what Jesus has commanded us, we have to know Jesus' commands and his teachings very, very well. There's no substitute for it. I'm not going to say much more about knowledge this morning. We talk about it all the time, knowing the gospel very well. There are a couple of things, a couple comments I'll make, though. We do need to know the gospel really well, but we also, I think, to be effective ambassadors, we need to know some of the common objections or doubts that people have in the culture around us to the gospel. What people around here need to be corrected on to understand the gospel is going to be different from what people in Tibet need to learn to understand Jesus correctly. So it's a good idea for us to have our finger on the pulse of the culture around us. That makes sense, doesn't it? Also, it's important to remember that none of us can know everything. I when I first became a Christian and really wanted to be able to share the gospel with people, I felt like I just had to know everything. I had to be an expert in philosophy, an expert in all the world religions. I had to be an expert in history, like all eras of history. And it was overwhelming. Well, none of us can know everything. I think we need to know the basics. We need to know the gospel itself well. We need to know the basics of some of the major issues for people around us, like the problem of evil, for example. We need to have a basic response to that. But we also need to know who does know answers, if I don't. We need to know where to find answers. We've got people you can ask questions of. I might go to Trinity and talk to some of the lecturers there. If I don't know something, I might go to their library. You need to know where to get an answer so that you know what to do if you don't know it already. Well, that's enough about knowledge. We're going to spend more time on the other two. I'm going to take them slightly out of order. We're going to talk about... Whoops. I don't know how we got back there. We're going to talk about character next. Wisdom comes second in Kokel's model, but we're going to spend most of our time on wisdom, so I'm saving that for last. An ambassador's character has to reflect his master well. Already had a great example of that from the kids. It's all well and good having a nice message, but it's not going to help if you're stingy and you don't share the chocolate. It doesn't look good. Okay? My kids have recently started at a new school. The Malcolm kids are going to be starting at a new school soon, and some of the other kids here have probably switched schools before. Kids, I want you to imagine if you went to a new school and you were meeting new people and you heard about another kid in your class named Todd, but you haven't met Todd yet, but you've met about 9 of Todd's friends, and they're all mean. Is Todd likely to be mean or nice? What do you reckon? Mean. Probably. You don't know for sure, do you? But if all of his friends are mean, there's a good chance he's mean too. If all of his friends are nice, you're more likely to think he's probably nice. And Christians, that's exactly the case with us and Jesus. If we run around being jerks and pushy, they're not going to be inclined to think much of Jesus. But if we are kind and loving and gentle and respectful the way Jesus taught us to be, then people will be more likely to hear us when we want to share the gospel, and they'll be more likely to think well of Christ. That's crucial for an ambassador, is to have a character that reflects well on the master. To have a conversation that's full of grace and seasoned with salt, like Paul said in Colossians, you actually have to be a gracious person. Paul's not asking them to play act like they're nice. It's got to be a truly gracious character that spills out into how we talk when we speak with other people. The same goes with giving answers with gentleness and respect. We actually need to be gentle and respectful people. Even when you don't agree with someone, it needs to be clear to them that you respect them. That has got to be who we are. Again, so that it overflows into how we speak as we represent Jesus. And then, finally, to teach others to obey what Jesus has commanded, we had better be obeying Jesus ourselves, haven't we? What sense does it make if I'm happy living my life not being the kind of person Jesus taught me to be, but I'm trying to get you to obey Jesus? Think of all Jesus' teaching, the Sermon on the Mount, all over the Gospels about how we should be loving and kind and gracious and merciful. We really need to take that on board and be obeying our Master if we're going to be good ambassadors for Him. A great passage that you can read, and you probably have already, but read it again, to think about a good Christian character, of course, is in Galatians 5, verses 22 and 23. That's the fruit of the Spirit. Thank you, Paul. And that another good reason to read that passage is that starting in the coming term, the kids' church is going to be studying the fruit of the Spirit. So the rest of the church family can be ready to discuss that text with the children as they're learning about it. Certainly, we need a good character to reflect on Christ. How does that work in practice? There's a lot of ways. I don't have time for 100 examples. I don't know why this keeps happening to me. Is there something I'm doing? Yes. Yes. Okay. Here we are. Oh, I don't have a slide for this one. But I do have one brief example about how I try to use, how I try to behave in a way that reflects well on Jesus. And it's very simple. This is me at the dentist. And I spend too much time at the dentist because I didn't brush my teeth very well as I was growing up. Kids, pay attention to that one. You don't want to have the trouble I've had. When I go to the dentist, there are two things that I try to do. I'm very conscious of this because I know I'm not likely to get a chance to share the gospel. You know, you get small talk while you're waiting for the x-rays to come back, that kind of thing. But by the time any kind of conversation could develop, I'm going to have all kinds of stuff stuck in my face. I'm not likely to get a chance to share the gospel, am I? How can I be an ambassador for Christ in that circumstance? There are two things I do every time I go to the dentist. The first is I try to make sure that the dentist knows that I'm a Christian. Somehow. I might have a Bible that I'm reading while I'm in the waiting room. And then when they tell me, oh, you can put your stuff over there, and I sit on the chair, maybe they'll see it. As they're making small talk, they ask me what I do for a living that's easy for me. They ask me about my family, whatever. I just try to say, oh, yeah, I was talking to a person at church about that the other day. Just anything to let them know that I'm a Christian. All right, so that's the first thing I do. The second thing I do is I try to be the best patient that that dentist has ever had. Ask your dentist sometime what people do that annoys them. And go out of your way not to do that with your next dentist. I sit very still. I do what they tell me. I turn my phone off. Some people try to have a phone conversation while the dentist is working. Very annoying for them. Okay, I try to be the best patient that I can. The last time I was in the dentist a week or two ago with getting a filling done, she kept saying how good a patient I was and how much smoother everything was going than it often does with some of her patients. That dentist knew two things about me. I'm a Christian, and I'm a nice guy. And now, even if I never get the chance to share the gospel with her, I have represented Jesus Christ well. Maybe one day I will get a chance to, and then she'll be more likely to listen to me, because I'm not a belligerent jerk, most of the time. And if somebody else gets the chance to share the gospel with her, the ground has partly been prepared because she met a guy who was nice and a Christian. Does that make sense? It's very simple. Very easy in our daily lives, provided we actually are nice folks. And all of you are. Now, telling the gospel, having wisdom in how we go about interacting with people. An ambassador has got to be wise and skillful to accomplish his master's mission. You can know all the facts about Jesus' mission and the gospel. You can be a very nice person, but you've also got to be thoughtful about how you engage with people to make sure that they will listen. Barry's got a great story that he shares sometimes about when he was a brand new Christian, there was a fellow that took him to evangelize some guys that were fishing down on the dock. And they just interrupted these fellows in what they were doing. They just barged in, they shared the gospel, and they backed out. And the fellow said, well, we did our job. I'm going to say, no, you didn't. I think Barry agrees with me. Because you don't get to tick the notch in your belt just because you shouted about Jesus at a brick wall. Your goal is to make disciples, right? So your goal is to make sure that you get a good hearing and that people listen. Okay? That's very important. You have to be wise about how you go about it. You've got to be wise to make the most of every opportunity. I don't think that was the most of that opportunity that they could have made. Not your fault, Barry. And you need to know how to answer everyone. How I answer this person might be different from how I answer that person, even if the content of my answer is the same. This takes wisdom. You've got to have a wise method to make sure that all the answers and reasons that you give to folks for the hope that you have are heard and considered. And you've got to be wise to actually make disciples. As I said, just talking the gospel at people that aren't listening doesn't help our cause. We want people to hear it, listen to it, and if possible, receive it and become disciples of Jesus Christ. And that's where a book like Kochel's Tactics is very handy. He, in his other resources and his book, he talks about various practical ways that he handles common situations in conversations. And he gives all of his tactics very odd, idiosyncratic names, like you can see up there. Don't worry about that. The names for now aren't going to mean much. We're not going to go through all of those tactics. We're going to talk about only one, the most important one, and the most basic one that anybody can do. By the way, have any of the kids found in their coloring a picture of a man with a dog? Are you wondering why that's there? Can you show that picture to an adult and see if they know who that man is? Does anybody know who that is? Yes, Columbo. Thanks, Jeremy. Columbo. Who knows Columbo? All right. So this tactic Kochel calls the Columbo tactic. Columbo was an old murder mystery show. Lots of fun. Lieutenant Columbo was the homicide detective that would solve the cases. And he was very shrewd, very smart, very perceptive, and he played dumb. What he always did was ask lots and lots of questions. I don't know, there's something about this that bothers me. Do you mind if I ask you a question? And they would answer, and he would say, oh, okay, well, that makes sense. Thanks very much for your time. But just one more thing. And he'd ask another question. He would ask lots of questions. That is the tactic that Kochel recommends at the top of all of them, is to ask a lot of questions. What kind of questions? There are two main ones that he thinks, and in my experience, are pretty helpful. These are great for navigating your way through a discussion with a non-Christian. You ask, what do you mean by that? And you ask, why do you think that's true? Or some variation of those. Why would you ask, what do you mean by that? The best way to find out what someone believes is to ask them. Sometimes somebody will say something, and they could mean it in a couple different ways. And instead of me jumping to conclusions about what they mean and trying to defend my faith against it, it pays to take a moment to clarify, what exactly do you mean? So say someone comes up to me and says, you know, the Bible has been changed, so you don't know what it originally said. My temptation is to launch into defending the Bible on that because I know a lot about that topic. I'm by no means an expert, but it's one that I have studied up on a lot over the years since I first became a Christian. So I've got all kinds of stuff that I could say in response to that. But why launch into an entire dissertation on all the aspects of that problem when I'm not 100% sure yet what he means when he says the Bible has been changed? What I should do is ask him, what do you mean by that? He might mean, some people get the impression, that the original documents of the Bible were translated into one language, and from that language translated to another, and from that language translated to another, until we finally get to English. That's not true, but that's maybe what he thinks. And so something's lost in translation every time, and now we have no idea what the original said. You can have fun with Google Translate. Has anyone done this? You pop something in English and get it in French, then you take the French and translate it to Chinese and check the Chinese and translate it, and you'll get nonsense at the end. So some people think that's what's happened with the Bible. He also might mean that from the original, copies were made, and little mistakes were made in those copies. And then the next time a copy was made, little mistakes were made. And copyist after copyist, century after century, thousands of little mistakes added up to the point where we have no idea what the Bible originally said. A lot of people believe that. But he might mean something entirely different. He might think that Emperor Constantine gathered up all the Bible documents and destroyed them and then rewrote the Bible to say what he wanted it to say. He might mean that modern English translations deliberately misrepresent what the originals said. There's any number of things that he might mean when he says the Bible has been changed. And so when he says that, I'm going to ask, What do you mean by that? How has the Bible changed? And I'll ask it in a kind and curious way, not a confrontational way. I won't say, well, what do you mean by that? I'll say, oh, that's interesting. Now, what do you mean by that? How has the Bible changed? Can you see what that question has done for me? It's a very polite and gentle way to start a conversation. Instead of my launching into why he's wrong, I show him that I'm willing to listen and hear him out. I show him that I'm respectful, which is what the Bible has said that we should be when we interact with non-Christians. I'm willing to listen. I'm not just here to shove my views down his throat. It shows the kind of character that reflects well on Christ as an ambassador. And again, it gives me clarity about what he believes. I don't need to waste my time talking about Constantine for 15 minutes if that wasn't even what he had in mind. Does that make sense? And the second question is equally important. How do you know it's true? And of course, you don't have to ask these questions word for word. There are other ways to ask it. How do you know that happened? What's the evidence that that's true? What are your reasons for believing that? Whatever is natural and makes sense at the time, you ask that, some way of asking, how do you know it's true? And again, you don't ask it in a challenging tone. He says the Bible has been changed. I say, you know, well, how do you know? You weren't there. That's not what we're doing. We are asking with a genuine curiosity about the reasons for their belief. And that shows them a lot of respect, because I'm assuming he has reasons for that belief. He might not. But when he has to answer my question, he'll find that out. What else does that question do for me? He says, the Bible has changed. You don't know what originally said. I said, well, what do you mean? How has it changed? He says, well, errors were made copy after copy until there were so many errors that we don't know what it says anymore. And I say, okay, you know, you seem to know an awful lot about these things. I'm curious. How do you know that that's what actually happened? What that does for me is, first, if he does have good reasons for thinking, then I'm going to learn something. He might say something that I hadn't thought of before, and I'm going to learn. Nobody loses in that situation. I will be polite. I'll hear him out. I'll thank him for his time. I'll tell him I'm going to think about it, and then I will. I will go find out if other Christians have good answers to those reasons that he gave me, and I'll be better prepared to answer that question the next time it comes up. Does that make sense? That's making the most of that opportunity. The second thing the question does for me, how do you know that's true, is if he does not have good reasons for believing it, he's going to learn something. I ask him, well, how do you know that the Bible was changed over the centuries? He says, well, everybody knows that. I said, well, I wasn't aware of that. I'm curious, what is the evidence that that's actually what happened? I'd like to learn more about it. And he kind of, well, I don't know. You know, everybody knows the Bible's been changed. Now, guess what? He's the one that's got some homework to do. I didn't tell him he doesn't have any good reason for his belief. He told me. I didn't do anything or say anything to make him look stupid or tell him he was wrong. All I did was ask a question. And here we are. He's probably just repeating something that he heard on a YouTube video. He might not follow it up, but he might. He might go away with something to think about that'll get him a step closer to taking the Bible seriously. And I might finish that conversation by saying, well, that may be okay for you, but you haven't given me reasons to change my mind on the matter. So I'm not going to believe that just because you've said it. And I'll say that gently, but I'll say it firmly. You're going to have to back up what you say. And that's the next thing that this does for me. Have you noticed I haven't done a lot of work here? All I've done is asked a couple questions. I haven't worn myself out. He made a claim that the Bible has been changed. It's his job to back that claim up. Why should I spend a lot of energy and work trying to show that that claim is wrong when he hasn't even lifted a finger to show me that it's right? No, I'm not going to waste my time on that. He can back up his claim. He's got the burden of proof. What this all comes down to is work smarter, not harder. So much more efficient. I ask questions, I try to guide the conversation, and I make him do the work as much as possible. Now, you can ask further questions if you happen to know about the topic at hand. So if someone's saying those kind of things to me, let's say somebody says, yeah, Constantine gathered up all the New Testament and destroyed it and made what he wanted. Then I can ask him some more pointed questions. I can say, oh, really? Okay, that's interesting. How did Constantine know where to find all those thousands of manuscripts all around the Mediterranean? How did he gather all of those up quickly enough and write all new copies and send them out and nobody noticed that he changed the Bible? And the church just kept on going. I can ask him that question gently, but say, look, you've got a claim here that you've made. I'm sure that you've considered this. So what's your theory about how that actually happened? And again, he's going to have something to think about then. But if you don't know enough about the topic to ask more pointed questions, everyone in this room can ask, what do you mean by that? And how do you know it's true? Is that fair? Everybody's capable of doing that. The worst case scenario, you learn something and you build a good relationship with this person by listening to them. Best case scenario, after they've given you what they believe, they ask you, well, what do you believe? Or you get some other good opportunity to share the gospel with them then. Make the most of every opportunity. The most won't always be converting the person there and then. And sometimes if we aim for that, all we do is push people away. And that's not making the most of the opportunity. Give yourself a more modest goal. Trust in the power of the gospel itself. And make the most of the opportunity. I think asking questions is a great way to do that. However, some of you may be thinking, asking questions? That's not our job. Our job is telling, not asking. We're supposed to tell the good news. It's not like Jesus said, go and ask questions of all nations. It's not like Peter said, always be prepared to ask a question. And Paul didn't say, let your conversation be always full of grace so that you may know how to question everyone. Some of you may be thinking, our job is just to proclaim. You know, it's not like it's an either or. It's not like you have to choose between them. You can ask questions and tell the gospel. And the whole point of this is that asking questions helps with telling the gospel. What are some advantages then of asking questions besides what we've already talked about? Or repeating what we've already talked about. The one is that anyone can do it. Anyone can do it. Asking questions is easy. You're prepared even when you're not prepared. You might have no idea what the person's talking about. You're prepared because all you need to do is ask questions. And you get prepared better for next time. Somebody springs something on you that you've never thought of before. You ask some questions, you learn more about it, you go talk to other Christians or find a book about it, and you're better prepared for the next time you talk to somebody. Questions are powerful. Jesus used them all the time in his teaching. Pick a gospel, read it, look for question marks. A question often will get through much better than a statement ever would. And Jesus used them a lot. Work smarter, not harder. Get yourself out of the hot seat. Make the other person do some work to back up their beliefs. It's only fair. Get the other person to make your point for you. Like the fellow that said the Bible was changed down through the centuries, and I asked him how he knew it was true, and he couldn't give me an answer. He told me that he didn't have good reasons for believing that. Another good example that Kokel uses, and this is very similar, there's an evangelist named Ray Comfort, and he does a very similar thing. I'm not always a very big fan of Comfort, but this is a cool tactic that he uses. Kokel tells a story about he met a Jewish man, and the Jewish man said, look, why do I need Jesus? I believe in God. What do I need Jesus for? And so Kokel started asking questions. He said, tell me, do you believe that people who commit moral crimes should be punished? And the man said, well, yeah. And so Kokel says, okay, have you ever committed a moral crime? Have you ever done anything wrong? And the man said, well, yeah. And Kokel said, great, you know, so have I. What just happened there? The Jewish man told the gospel to Kokel. The Jewish man said, I deserve punishment because I have done wrong. And Kokel said, look, I'm in the same boat, and that's why you need Jesus as much as I do. Does that make sense? You can get the other person to make your point for you. And then there's no way they can walk away thinking that you've been belligerent or pushy. Questions, they're good, gentle, respectful ways to guide a conversation. If all you do is ask questions, nobody could ever accuse you of shoving your religion down their throat or something stupid like that. Listening, I think this is tremendously important. Listening will get you a hearing. If you hear somebody out, you listen to their point of view, you show them that you respect them, they are much more likely to listen to you in turn. Again, our goal is for people truly to hear the gospel and become disciples. Drive-by evangelism doesn't work. As if we can just scatter the gospel from a gun as we drive by and hope that it lands somewhere. We need to do the best that we can to make sure that it's heard and digested and accepted by the person we're talking to. It's also great for building relationships. Go and read Titus 2 later today and think about the instructions that Paul gives to all kinds of people, young people, old people, men, women. Look at the words that he uses for the kind of character that these people should have. And then notice the three times in the passage that the word "so that" appears. And ask yourself, why should my character look like that? Now, what's interesting about that is it can take some time for someone to find out who you are and what your character is like. The implication of Titus 2 and other passages in the Bible is that we are under the eye of non-believers all our lives long. In the context of a relationship in which a person knows that you are a respectful and trustworthy person, that's the context in which they're going to feel safe enough to discuss very personal things with you, like religious faith. And that's the sort of context in which they're likely to listen. Listening will get us a hearing. So asking questions is a good use of that. And again, make the most of every opportunity. I don't know what the most is. It's no good just shouting the gospel in someone's face and guaranteeing that I push them away. Instead, I'll ask questions, I'll probe, I'll build a relationship, and if all I'm able to do is get them one step closer to listening, I have done well. That might be the most of that opportunity that's before me. If I can go further, I will. Okay, so what now? I don't know where we are. Forget the slide. Oh, no, that's the right one. I wanted to end with him because that's funny. Sorry. Okay, what now? Go try it out. That's all. There's nothing else you need. Everybody here nodded their heads when I said, can you ask, what do you mean by that? And how do you know it's true? There's nothing else to stop you now. Go and try it out. Come with me and try it out with our neighbors around here. I've been talking about doing some door knocking, and I think a lot of people have got the impression that I'm talking about being like a Jehovah's Witness or a Mormon and shoving my religion in people's faces. I'm not talking about that at all. I'm talking about asking some questions, building some relationships, having conversations with people, and being nice. If they don't want to see me, I'll just go on to the next house. No problem. Come along to the pizza night. Oh, I don't like pizza. That's not what it's about. I don't like that movie. Who cares? Come along, spend some time with some visitors to the church, and maybe get a good conversation going with somebody. You can come and see Simone about volunteer opportunities in Mainly Music. They could use some help. That is a great opportunity to build some relationships with people from outside the church and maybe ask some questions. Whatever. Invite some people over to your home for dinner and ask them questions. Whatever you do, just give it a try. You've got to do something. We're all ambassadors for Christ. Know the gospel, live the gospel, tell the gospel, represent Jesus well and faithfully, and ask a lot of questions.